The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster, along with my friend Tom Fairbanks, on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our show. Together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. It is Thursday, August the 9th, 2018. We're coming to you live from AM 1030, KVOI, Tucson's Voice, worldwide live listening, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com, all of our podcasts, the complete show archive available for you 24/7 on my website, buckmastershow.com. And this is a talkback show, so that means you're willing to call in at if you're willing to call in and you want to make a comment, that's fine. 790-2040, Ward 6, Democrat Tucson Kasachek with us on the Buckmaster Show live line. Councilman, how are you today?
Doing okay. Just stretching out some stiffness from the early morning run, but it was nice and cool and nice change of weather.
And how many miles did you get in this
morning? About a dozen. Kind of slow going this morning in the humidity.
At one time, you were doing almost 15 to 20 miles a day.
Yeah, I get the 15 in most of the time, but it was just kind of slogging along today. But it was nice.
The marquee item at the Tucson City Council meeting last night, the city examining new limits on smoking. Could you please give us the backstory of this?
Well, we were approached by a group of young folks, they suggested that they would appreciate if we would help them out by increasing the legal age to buy cigarettes, all tobacco products, including the e-cigarettes, to 21. They made a compelling case from the standpoint of the impact of nicotine on young people. We all know that it wasn't a light bulb going off moment for any of us at the table. You know, guys our age have known since the 60s that it's bad for you. And so we certainly had a good conversation about it. We did not just jump in with both feet, though. I raised the question about enforcement costs and what that would look like. The county Department of Health did a study several months ago when they were considering it at the countywide level, and they felt it would cost them about $250,000 a year to enforce it. That's a lot of money. We do not have code enforcement people or TPD staff who can make the rounds and do an enforcement effort like that, like what would be required to make this effective. And so what we had, the conversation was, let's do some outreach to some of the surrounding jurisdictions. If the city of Tucson passed this, somebody could drive under the reservation or drive into Pima County or another jurisdiction around town and just buy their cigarettes there. So there's that. Have a conversation about what that enforcement looks like and how we're going to pay for it. Right now, if you sell tobacco in the city, you pay a $100 annual permit fee. If we can increase that fee and pick up and cover the cost of enforcement through those increased revenues, then we have a no cost situation going on. So while I believe everybody at the table was sympathetic and interested in addressing the issue of teen smoking, whether it's tobacco or the e-cigarettes, then the rest of the conversation is what are the details look like, and that's where we are right now. So staff is going to come back within 60, 90 days with a proposal to us that speaks to enforcement, speaks to costs, speaks to outreach to the other jurisdictions, and so someone's just not driving across the county line to pick them up there.
Steve Kasachek with us on the Buckmaster Show. We try to get him on about once a month, and we have not talked to you since this deal was worked out with the developer over the Benedictine Monastery. Perhaps you can give us the very latest on that, Steve.
Sure. This began several months ago with Ross Rolney having purchased the monasteries, about $6 million. The initial pitch was that the underlying zoning entitles him to knock down the monastery and put student housing on it or in it. The conversation has evolved through several iterations. I've had very public meetings with him, with neighbors, both from neighborhoods surrounding the monastery and from across town. A lot of interest in this piece of property, as you know. The most recent step is that Ross has agreed to a height of no greater than 55 feet, which would be four stories of residential over one story of parking. That would be market rate housing, not student housing. It would be public use and preservation of the monastery buildings. The conversation yet to be had as to what that public use would be. He has agreed to a design review committee made up of residents from around the area so that there would be public input into what the architecture looks like on what he's proposing to build on that 4+1 architecture. I felt that if he capped it at 55 feet with all the rest of those elements in the package, that would be a good compromise. And so I said, if that's where we're headed with this thing, and the alternative is 40-foot student housing that would have about 800 students, 800 beds in it versus 375 market rate, then that would be a deal that I thought that both sides have given some, and it's a reasonable compromise. He has submitted, his design team has submitted a package to the planning department at the city that reflects that deal. There will still be a public process going forward. He has to do two things, well, three. Number one, he has to amend the area plan, the Miramonte neighborhood plan and the Alvernine area plan. It's not a formality. It's a public process that'll take about 6 months to do. After that, he begins the rezoning. And that's when you get into kind of the architectural questions and the design review and all those pieces and the use of the monastery. I have suggested to him that it would be to his benefit if he front-loaded the plan amendment. I know this sounds kind of arcane, but if he put as much as he could into the first step so that what's it going to look like, what are the public uses that are being considered, what are public uses that are going to be exempted, so that the people can see up front, here's where this is headed. So there's no kind of head-scratching, you know, trust me kind of thing for how this will turn out. I think it will benefit him. There's a small group right now that's running around suggesting that I went and cut a backroom deal with him. I really resent that. I met very publicly with neighbors. He met very publicly with neighbors. We've had multiple meetings in the monastery itself with hundreds of people. So there's no backroom deal going on. And there will still be a very robust public process going forward. But, Bill, if he is willing to go from 86 feet, 7 stories, down to 55 feet, 4 stories over 1 story of parking, and make sure that this does not turn into a dorm, by the way, that 40-foot dorm would actually turn the monastery into a dorm as well and a clubhouse. So there would be no public access. I think that's a deal that the community should embrace and would embrace.
So this group that's saying you had a backroom deal going on with the developer, are they kind of have some formal opposition to this, or what is their main complaint here?
Well, their main complaint, I'm going to try and be fair to them because I think they're just flat wrong, but their main complaint is that I should not have indicated to Ross that I wouldn't lay down in the tracks if he committed to 55 feet and all the other things that I mentioned, the design review and the architectural elements and all that. They would have preferred just to let it play out. He has an investor, Ross, has an investor in New York who, by the way, is a senior investor, and so Ross is the junior partner, who is looking at this from a distance and saying, why are you even messing around? Time is money in the construction industry, and let's just build the student housing and move on to our next project. Ross is the local guy, and so I give him credit for saying that's not the best deal for the community. The group of residents who are saying that I should not have indicated to him my support wanted to string this out and see if we could extract another pound of flesh. And my point was, be careful how long you drag this out, because he at any point in time, even now, is entitled to say, this is costing me money, and I'm just going to build the student housing and walk away from the table. If he were to do that, there would be no public voice going forward in any of the decisions, because that's what he's allowed to do by right. So I just felt that we were at a point where he had given, and the community had given, and I thought that, you know, at some point, let's not give up the good trying to strive for the perfect, and I think that's where we are.
All right, we'll take a break right here. Steve Kasacek, stick around. We've got another segment with you. This portion of our program presented by my favorite bakery in town, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Tom Fairbanks, when I mentioned that Danish Kringle there on the other side of the glass, Tom's face just lit up. He'd probably like a nice piece of that Kringle right about now to pilot for his dessert after the burger he just had. All right, go to Mona's Danish Bakery, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise, for your lunch. The bread that will be served, your sandwich will come with great fresh bread. Came out of the oven a couple of hours ago. BuckmasterShow.com. There's a website to Mona's and a website link to all of the great sponsors and partners of this program, Buckmaster. Be right back. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Friday during the noon hour, Jan Lesher, Deputy Pima County Administrator, is our Friday Focus interview. Joining me on the roundtable, Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News, and Joe Ferguson, political writer for the Arizona Daily Star. Matt Russell of Inside Tucson Business with Weekend Watch, Buckmaster, noon to 1 on AM 1030, KVOI, Tucson's voice. Well, 20 on this Thursday afternoon, Steve Kasachek, Democrat Ward 6, with us on the live line. We were just talking about the Benedictine Monastery, its future, and of course, another development has got a lot of folks got their interest up, and that is this new boutique hotel and market-rate apartments, retail, restaurants, and a public plaza coming to the University of Arizona area. Now, what's the blowback been from this, Steve Kasachek?
Haven't had much blowback at all. The merchants in the area, on the main gate area, are supportive. It's going to have parking to support the needs. If you've been around main gate, you know that comes at a premium. It is also going to provide residents, which means customers. There will be a commercial element to it as well. It's going to be have a symbiotic relationship with the campus, because this is a combination of apartments and hotel rooms. So it's really getting quite the positive reception. It's an important addition. There at some point will be, and I think we're bumping that saturation point when it comes to student housing, but the apartments and the hotels supporting activities in and around campus, we have not seen a saturation element on that yet, and so it's been a positive reception to it.
And we have school, the U of A, back in session very soon. How would you characterize the relationship, at least in your ward, which of course is the University of Arizona area? How is that relationship right now?
Between
neighbors, you know, there's been problems in the past, as folks are very well aware of, and I wonder just if things were looking everything cool as we get ready.
It's like mowing the lawn. I mean, two nights ago, literally, I was meeting with people from campus and people who live around campus. There was a fraternity who wanted to go and lease some space in a couple of houses off campus, and there's the predictable opposition to it. Frankly, I supported the opposition. In this case, the guy's house isn't even zoned properly for it. But when you're asking to move 40 or 50 fraternity brothers into the middle of a residential neighborhood, the impact is predictable, and we face it every year. We face it every semester. So I have met with Bobby Robbins and had this personally, this conversation, that it would benefit everybody, the community, the university. If the strategy going forward for student housing was to take some of the dorms, the one- and two-story dorms, the old ones on campus, and knock them down and go vertical within the campus footprint, I think that would benefit everybody. It's a drain on TPD resources. It's a drain on the Dean of Students. It's a drain on the UAPD resources. Mostly, though, it's a drain on the quality of life of the residents who live in the neighborhood surrounding campus. And I know you bought a house next to a university. What should you expect? Well, when you buy a house anywhere, you should be able to anticipate the quiet enjoyment of your own area, and not have some of the scale of parties that we see. And these aren't the parties that you and I may have experienced back when we were in school, where you invite a handful of friends over and buy a keg or whatever. And what we are seeing now are called texting parties. And so you and I'll show up and text a couple of friends, hey, there's a party over at Bill's place, and before you know it, and we have seen this, we've got 100 or 200 people in the streets outside, and the guys who threw the party originally don't even know the people who are showing up.
Wow.
So we've had extremely loud and invasive parties in the areas around campus, and so that's what we're trying to avoid. I think if the U of A could bring it back onto the campus footprint, it would benefit everybody.
Well, my parties at the U of A in the late 60s were quite intimate affairs with just a couple of couples, people listening to the Doors and just kicking back, and everything was very mellow. But this sounds like this text parties, these get out of control very quickly.
Yeah, and we have actually had residents who are the ones who called TPD and asked them to come and help break it up because they don't know the people who are in their own home and out in the streets. So It's a different situation.
Okay, let's get your how you gauge this proposed $225 million bond for parks. I have heard nothing but people being very positive about this. Maybe you're hearing a different scenario.
Well, since the last time we spoke, I've been working with the city manager, and the last time we spoke, you'll recall I had questions about it. My main question was, how are you going to pay for maintaining these new bright, shiny objects? Everybody agrees that park system is one of our charter responsibilities. It's something that we ought to be putting money into. And frankly, the Parks Department has been the one that's taken the financial haircut since the recession. In the last few weeks, I've been meeting with the city manager and mayor, and yesterday we had a very productive conversation at the council about putting together a sequestered and identifiable parks maintenance fund. It'll be made up of monies that we're already spending from the Department of Transportation, from the Parks Department, but also pulling in some dollars from the gas tax, HERF money, that can be used on the connectivity pieces and the greenway pieces. Talking to the Flood Control District, right now the Flood Control District uses those dollars to maintain the loop. If we are building connectivity pieces within this parks bond, we ought to be able to use flood control money to maintain those. In addition to that, turn to the private sector. You know, a few years ago, we did this back the splash thing, and the private sector stepped up and wrote some checks to open pools. Private sector can write some checks to help adopt a park and maintain the park. So going forward, in November, we will have on the ballot not only the Parks Initiative, but we will uniquely be able to point to a specific fund, a line item that we will replenish annually through our budget process that is identified and earmarked for maintaining what we're building. That's something that's been lacking in the past. With that addition, I think it becomes a more compelling package. I do still have some concerns about how long the ballot's going to be and competition, competitive items on the ballot, and specifically the county road piece. But without the maintenance piece, it was not getting my support. With this maintenance piece, and I think we should have done this with or without the bond package, but with the maintenance piece, I think it becomes a compelling and important package to the quality of life in Tucson.
I think the Star had, I think it was last Sunday, had did some polling on this, and it looked like folks were pretty enthusiastic about it.
Yeah, and if you'll recall back a few years ago when the county bond package, the thing that had 99 different items on it, it failed miserably. All of them went down. Mm-hmm. The city of Tucson voters supported the majority of those items, and so that's who's going to vote on this. It's not a county parks package. It's a city parks package. And I just felt, just from a standpoint of being responsible, saying we're not just going to build these things, but we're going to show you that we can take care of them financially afterwards. I think that was a missing link that I'm glad that we're having as a part of it now.
Boy, the Broadway widening plan has disappeared from the media right now. Is that sort of under the radar, isn't it?
Well, we have some good things happening, though. So Rio Nuevo has hired a group called Project for Public Spaces, and they are right now, the city is just finishing up the public acquisition of the buildings largely on the north side of the road. Until it becomes a public asset, Rio Nuevo can't take ownership of it, just statutorily. So now that the city is finalizing the purchase of the north side properties, Rio Nuevo, you're going to soon see stepping in and buying up some of these properties for the purposes of adaptive reuse. And so we're not just going to continue demolishing buildings, and you're going to see some creative design and creative reuse. Nodes that are destinations, the kinds of things that, frankly, we've heard the community asking for the last 5 years, instead of just widening the road and throwing more asphalt down. So I voted against the widening. I don't think it's necessary from the standpoint of people's driving habits and traffic flow. But from the standpoint of now we having Rio stepping in and hiring Project for Public Spaces and creating something that is a destination along Broadway, as opposed to just knocking buildings down and widening the road, I think that we could turn that lemon into some lemonade, at least in a few areas along that stretch of the road. So, we'll have a little bit of positive. Overall, I think the RTA could have done better by shifting some of those dollars from Broadway over to some financially challenged projects like Grant Road, for instance. We'll wind up in a decent place, not a real good place, but a decent place on this one.
30 seconds left, Steve Kasacek. If someone, say you were out of town, you were in an elevator, somebody said, how's the city of Tucson doing right now? What would your response be?
I think we're doing very well, and if you're just coming into town right now in 30 seconds, I would say here's something that we didn't touch on. We're going to sign a contract with an arena football team that's going to be a new tenant down at the TCC from about March and through the summer. So,
wow.
new tenant down there, and so we've got a lot going on downtown, a lot of activities, a lot of positive happening in this community, and I'm proud to be a part of the people who are helping to manage it.
I hadn't heard about the arena football. Could you give me just a few more seconds?
Yeah, so they'll play a 7-game home season. It'll start in about March. It will not conflict with the Roadrunners. They'll play 7 home and 7 away. The ownership group is the same one that owns the Arizona Rattlers out of Phoenix. There are approximately 10 teams in the league, one of which will be the Phoenix team, so there'll be an in-state rivalry. From a financial standpoint, it'll be a very, very similar deal to what we have with the Roadrunners. So it'll be positive financially, and it'll be another opportunity for people to visit the newly remodeled TCC.
Okay, Steve Kasacek, thank you very much. Always a pleasure. We'll talk to you in September.
All right, great. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. Steve Kasacek, Ward 6, Tucson City Councilman. Coming up next, small talk. Pretty good for you, actually. Some new research says nothing wrong with it. Actually, it can make people feel happier. So we'll talk with the University of Arizona researcher who's really got some interesting things to say about all of that after this on Buckmaster.
Get your tickets now for Arizona Wildcats football. Kevin Sumlin leads the program into a new era, and we want you to be part of it. Season tickets start at the new low price of $70 for all 7 home games. Flex packs, group tickets, and single game tickets are also on sale. The new era of Arizona football starts September 1st when the Wildcats take on BYU at Arizona Stadium. Get your tickets today at arizonawildcats.com/FB or call 621-CATS.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, it's Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust. and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques? It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. It's 25 minutes before 1 o'clock. This portion of the program presented by Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River Walk, and just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, 13 acres at Green Things, not only serving you with all your gardening needs, a wonderful supply of everything that's green, but now some great merchandise for the interior of your home. And there's also some great pottery for outdoors as well from Zocalo. For years, Zocalo was headquartered over near Country Club in Broadway. Well, they're now at Green Things. All that great merchandise from Mexico and Latin America and some European things too. Check it out. So you can shop at Zocalo and also at Green Things for all of your gardening needs. GreenThingsAZ.com. Well, small talk may not be what folks originally thought. Well, some people say, oh, small talk doesn't really lead you anywhere, but it might link you to an increased sense of well-being and happiness. Let's welcome now Dr. Matthias Mell, a professor of psychology at the University of Arizona. Dr. Mell, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for inviting me to the show.
You are the co-author of this research that was done looking at, that actually was published in the journal Psychological Science. Tell me how you came to this particular study and why you were very interested in this.
This was really a very large project that involved several researchers at the University of Arizona in different departments and beyond. And in fact, it was a replication of a study that we, or an attempt of replication of a study that we had done in 2010. And in essence, we wanted to know how the quantity and quality of people's daily interactions relates to how happy people are and how satisfied they are with their lives. And in many ways, it's a really old question and a very basic and important question, but we try to approach it with a new methodology, with kind of a new scientific pair of eyes. What we had was a way to not have people fill in a questionnaire and say, how many interactions do you have on a daily basis, but actually measure how and how much people talk in their daily lives. And the methodology we used, we call it the EAR, the electronically activated recorder, is really, in essence, an audio recorder that unobtrusively comes on for short periods of time and samples ambient sounds around participants. And originally, that was indeed a tape recorder, and nowadays, of course, it's not anymore. Now it's a smartphone app, and people carry it around for several days and bring it back to us, and what we get essentially is soundbite by soundbite, an acoustic log of the person's day as it unfolds. So in the morning you get up, you hear the dishes and things like that, and then people go to work, and we hear that, and they come home, and the kids are screaming, and then they go to bed. And so what we can do is we can determine for every single soundbite we have, is there an interaction on there? that the person had, and what kind of interaction is it, and is it more kind of on the side of small talk, or is it more on the side of a meaningful conversation?
Did this surprise you, Dr. Mel?
So we found that people who have more interactions are happier, and it was a really, really robust effect. And on some level, it didn't surprise me because you would think that a happy life is a social life, but the robustness of it and that such a simple marker of how much time people spend talking is one of the strongest markers of well-being, that did surprise me. What also surprised me is initially we had found that people who had more small talk were less happy. And that was in a sample of about 80 people, and now we amped things up and had almost 500 participants and tried to replicate that, and we didn't find it anymore. So small talk was not positively related to well-being, but it was also not negatively related to well-being. So really it seems that it's kind of an inactive ingredient in our social life that we probably need in order to get somewhere, to get kind of to more meaningful topics. But really, it was the meaningful conversations that were robustly related to well-being over and above how much people were talking.
Well, Dr. Mel, I'm a small talker, and I have found it leads to more meaningful conversations. Is that fairly typical of some of the people that they were reporting in the research?
Yeah, I do think, I mean, that was the surprise. I mean, when we initially published, people said, well, it can't be that small talk is negatively related, because in reality, you do need small talk. Mm-hmm. You can't just approach somebody, a stranger, and talk about the afterlife, right? So you need to really display rules, there's a social context, what's appropriate. But I think the challenge really is to get from the small talk, as you say, then to the next level, to a more intimate or more personal level where real information is exchanged.
Why do you suppose the small study, and it was only 79 college students that, Dr. Mel, that you published in 2010, why do you think it had such kind of a different take on small talk than this larger sample?
I think the simplest explanation is that with only 80 participants, you just have less precision in your scientific estimates, and it can be that by some sampling bias, you happen to have people in the participant pool for whom you get a negative association, but when you really go at scale, when you have a much larger sample to draw on, then you get more precise estimates and better and more accurate estimates. It could, of course, also be that it has something to do with the environment, that maybe in a college environment, people who have small talks are particularly vulnerable to that, but I honestly don't think so, because our sample in the replication had college students, it had working adults, healthy working adults, it had participants who were recently divorced, and overall, we just don't find this negative effect anymore.
Now, one of your co-researchers is a senior research scientist at the University of Zurich in Switzerland, and I'm curious, are there differences between what perhaps Europeans would consider small talk and Americans? Or is small talk, no matter where you are in the world?
That's a very good question. And I think when you go to Europe, there may even be some stereotypes about cultural differences in conversation quality and the prevalence of small talk. I mean, to me, I can only speculate. I think the quality of small talk may be different, but there's small talk in Europe and there's small talk in the U.S. So it was actually, like, to me, it was very surprising how, this is not culture, but this is personality, how, for example, personality did not make a big difference in that. You could say that if you're a really outgoing person, you can live on small talk. You don't really need all that deep talk, right? And that introverts maybe particularly require these meaningful personal encounters in order to be happy. And what we found is that in terms of well-being, really introverts and extroverts seem to run on the same conversational fuel. There was no difference in that extroverts, that the effect was different for extroverts or introverts.
How about this, Dr. Mel? What is considered small? What's the border between where do you, you know, you begin with small talk, perhaps, hey, how about that weather? Gee, that rain the other night was really something. Then what's the transition from small talk to more meaningful conversation, if you will?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we deliberately put the bar for small talk pretty low. We define small talk as a trivial conversation where no real information is exchanged. So after the conversation, both parties of the conversation pretty much know the same about each other. So we put the bar where, for the first time, the person reveals something about themselves. And we shied away. We initially wanted to know deep conversations. That was the original idea we have, like how deep conversations relate to well-being. But then you listen to these sound files. And of course, frankly, not all too many conversations in our daily lives are really deep. So we coined this term substantive conversation, a conversation where there is a topic, a substance, where there is real information exchange, where people learn something about each other or about a topic.
Very interesting. Matthias Mell. Dr. Mell, thank you very much. Your research, very interesting about small talk. Appreciate you visiting with us. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Thank you a lot.
All right. Dr. Mell, professor at the University of Arizona. Small talk actually turns out looks like it's good for your health and your well-being. We're going to take our break right here. When we come back, the Buckmaster Show education contributor, Dr. Robert Hendricks, he's one of 24 regular contributors that we're so honored to have on this program, who are with us usually at least once a month. We'll have Dr. Hendricks after this. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improved regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, Thursday edition. We're on AM 1030 KVOI, worldwide live listening, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com as well. This portion of our program, presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. It's only a three-hour drive from Tucson. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. That's the first place I would suggest before you take the trip. There you will find a complete listing of the great places to stay, and there's some really nice properties over in that area. Several dozen recreation opportunities, doing some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, which is all greened up now with our summer rains. So check out southwestnewmexico.org for more information. Let's welcome Dr. Robert Hendricks, the Associate Professor Emeritus at the University of Arizona College of Education. He is a Buckmaster Show contributor, one of two dozen contributors. He is our education specialist, the former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District. Dr. Hendricks was Arizona's top school superintendent in 1989. Robert, Bob, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Bill. I've got a little bit of a throat issue today. I've been traveling, and I think I picked up a bit of a cold, so
it does.
My voice might be a bit hoarse.
Yeah, it does happen on these long trips with that recycled air on the planes, and folks do get pick up some colds or a little bit of throat issue, but we will soldier through it. We can hear you pretty well. And what about cell phones and laptops, Bob? Do they affect students' grades at all? Have there been any studies on this?
Well, there's a really interesting recently published study in the very prestigious Journal of Educational Psychology that looks at the broader theme of how technology advances have changed the cultural norms, particularly in the classroom. And this particular study looked at the intrusion of electronic devices, for example, laptops and tablets and cell phones, which allow students to basically divide their attention between what's happening in the classroom and truly unrelated activities. And so this researcher, Dr. Arthur Glass, who's a professor at Rutgers, studied the link between cell phone and laptop usage during class and the performance of students. And this was all done in the university environment. So what he did, Bill, was he took his students who were in an upper-level psychology class, and there were multiple sections, and he allowed them to use their electronic devices during half of his lecture periods. And interestingly, 87% of the students, when allowed to do so, did elect to use their devices. And then the other half of the semester, they were told they had to put away their devices. So proctors enforced the no device days, and they basically made sure that on those days, students were not using their devices. And then they also monitored during the days they were using their devices what they were using their devices for. And interestingly, many students, not all, but many students were using their devices for texting, watching movies, playing games, or shopping. This was all during the lecture. And here's what's even more interesting to me. Most students were totally unfazed the fact that the proctor was monitoring these activities. In other words, the proctors were looking over their shoulders and students, it didn't affect their activities. They continued to do it. Mm. So Glass examined the student performance on their daily quizzes, on their unit exams, and their final exam. And what he determined was that in many cases, students' grades were significantly lower when the material covered competed with the time when they were using their devices. And so while this may seem very logical, this is a really interesting result, which I think causes ought to cause professors and maybe teachers also at the undergraduate level and at the secondary level to consider, you know, what is the role of electronic devices in the classroom? And furthermore, should they be banned? The Glass, who is a researcher and a teacher, has completely banned the use of electronic devices in his classroom, and he's urged his colleagues to do the same. But here's his quote. I've encouraged colleagues to do the same, but, quote, they want to maintain an atmosphere where the class treats them as a friend or an entertainer. So I don't expect them to follow my advice. So really, really interesting.
All right, let's go to the live line. Matthew has a question for Dr. Robert Hendricks. Go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, Dr. Hendricks, you know, I've given a lot of thought to the fact that, you know, I think charters are here to stay. Public schools are here, are going to, you know, they'll probably stay 20%, public schools, you know, 80%. But in looking at all the good and bad and ups and downs, my feeling is that we no longer need to blame the schools. Even the charter schools have realized if you're a charter school and you're in a poor community, you're going to have poor results. The reality is we need to hold the cities accountable, that they need to work to improve the economic reality for their citizens. And they're the onus for why children are not achieving. If you're in a crime-ridden area and things like that, you're not going to succeed. Anyway, your thoughts. Thank you.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, the studies repeatedly suggest that there's a high correlation between economic conditions in which children live and grow and are influenced by, and the impact of their success in schools. And we seem to continually ignore that. But the reality is that those situations need more resources, need more attention, and if it's not given to those students, they're going to continue to fail, and their failure is society's failure.
Let's see if we can work a quick Facebook question in for you, Dr. Hendricks. This comes from David, saying that many schools are mostly, if not all high schools, reliant on online programs from corporations like Pearson. I'm not familiar with Pearson.
Yes,
but
I am.
Okay, maybe you are. So no more books in the classroom? That's what our Facebook friend is wondering.
Well, online instruction has become very popular, and there is some degree of effectiveness that can be measured by it, but the reality is that it's economically inexpensive to provide online instruction. By doing so, I think oftentimes schools are able to save money. But argue the other end of that, schools are also be able to provide a consistent curriculum, and sometimes that has not happened in classrooms, and teachers have strayed off the normal instructional path, and students have been shortchanged. So there's some degree of benefit to the structure of a curriculum delivered online, but it also is less expensive and sometimes not as interactive, not personally as interactive as working directly with a teacher instruction.
Okay, getting back to our original topic of the cell phones in the classroom, if you were teaching a class, would you say no cell phones or devices in your class, Dr. Hendricks?
Well, it's a good question. You know, in the study, it did show some students who legitimately used their laptop to take notes,
mm-hmm.
and some students who used their cell phone to take pictures of the work that was done on the board.
Huh.
And so maybe there's some limitations to its use, but I would say its wholesale use is problematic. Some might argue that, well, that's the student's responsibility, not instructors, to be there, to be ready to learn. But I think the side effect of that is that they found that even students who did not use the cell phone or the tablet in the classroom oftentimes were distracted by those students who were.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I would say no. Most universities do not have policies that restrict usage, so it's really up to the individual instructor.
Okay.
And I would also say that let's move away from the instruction delivery model that's simply lecture, and let's engage students more. And maybe if we engage them more, there wouldn't be the tedium and monotony sometimes that
yes.
is brought about by lectures. You know, maybe yep. part of this is our own undoing.
Okay. Dr. Hendricks, thank you very much. Appreciate it very much, sir. Thanks.
Sure.
All right. Sure. Coming up this afternoon, Mike Check with Mike Shaw. Wake Up Tucson tomorrow morning at 6 to 9. And me, Buckmaster, at 12:04. Thank you, Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing. Have yourself a great afternoon and evening.